How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are nearly every Sunday. We were actually off the air last week, so we have 2 weeks worth of news to talk about. It's going to be a tremendously packed show. We're going to talk about the debut of Season 3 of NXT. Yes, I am listing that as the top story on this week's program. It's really not, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about there, and they're going the distance. What that means, we don't know yet, but it's not going to be a truncated season of the show. They're going to do the first elimination in 4 weeks, which is right around the time they get bumped off Sci-Fi. So we'll talk about that, all of the girls, all of the pros, and more. A lot of big shows this past weekend, some of which on over-the-air pay-per-view, some of which were not. We'll talk about the ROH show from the Manhattan Center. Very good show, as was the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view, which is probably still playing here and there on your local cable affiliate. Also, two MMA shows, Shark Fights and Shine Fights. I can't tell you how many people were confused about which was which, including all the people that I was going to watch the show with. I ended up watching Shine Fights. I believe Mike ended up watching a little bit of both. We'll talk about those shows. The Shine Fights in particular was one for the ages. Just a complete disaster of a show. We'll talk about some harassment to a former WWE superstar. A great documentary, which you can check out online, called Choke, following Hickson Gracie as he prepares to and competes in the 1995 Japan Valet Tudo Open. This coming week, Ultimate Fighter, Josh Koscheck and George St. Pierre will talk about that show, its debuting, as well as an Ultimate Fight Night to kick it off. Hulk Hogan was in the hospital. We'll talk about the NOAH Tag Team Belts. John Cena's new film, which opened up in very select theaters this weekend, if you're one of the lucky elite able to see it. We'll let you know what people thought about that particular film. The Florida promotion appears to be no more. Haven't talked a lot about it, but we'll talk a little bit about it on this show, tell you what the idea was and where it appears to be going at this point. And that is nowhere, by the way. The No Surrender pay-per-view from last week from TNA. I actually did not see that show. I was traveling, but Mike saw the show. He can talk about that. I was actually down in Los Angeles watching the Battle of LA tournament, which was a hell of a lot better, apparently, than the TNA show. Although Jeff Hardy and Kurt Angle apparently had a very good match. So we're going to talk about all of that and a lot more. Take your email questions as well. No shortage of stuff to talk about today on the day that football kicks off. So if you're listening to this right now, you are hardcore. We'll be back in just a moment with more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And Mike, was the season debut of NXT 3 featuring a bunch of rookie girls from the Florida Developmental Group. It was train wreck television. I'm trying to figure out, it was actually, I can't say it was a bigger train wreck than Shine Fights because it had better production, but it was a train wreck of a television show. And
oh, it was far more entertaining than Shine Fights.
That's undoubtedly true. But what were your thoughts on episode 1 of season 3 of NXT?
It was fascinating. As dumb as this sounds, and you're going to look at reports that people who didn't see it have read reports on it, it was something else. I mean, if you take the wrestling, anything that has anything to do with professional wrestling out of the mix, I mean, it was a junior VH1 level version of, you know, Trainwreck TV. This is something that is going to get tiring quick, but for one episode it was fascinating because one of these girls should have even be sniffing the main roster right now. The rest of it was a show that seemed to be one big inside joke that WWE was kind of letting you in on. I mean, it was better done in some ways than like the Diva Search competitions each week, but between the nonsense that took place, like Michael Cole and Tony Chimmel and Josh Matthews all dancing with the girls and Vicky Guerrero's dynamic with her new rookies, considering the 6'9" one was actually taken off the show because she wasn't, if she was not anywhere close to ready, I can't see how bad she could possibly be. in comparison to some of the other girls that are on this show. I mean, it was just, it's going to get old fast probably, but it, for the first one, it was just an amazingly wacky train wreck, but no one injured type of television.
Well, no one was injured this week, but I'm very worried about future episodes of the show when they do stuff like obstacle courses and that sort of thing. This week they did some wrestling matches, and they were bad. The bad thing about the wrestling matches was I remember Kelly Kelly got in the ring, and I thought, well, I guess we're going to find out, you know, which rookies are better than Kelly Kelly. And we found out the answer was Naomi. Kelly is really bad. And she's actually better than some of these girls, which is astounding. But she's worse than some of them. And they had some matches. Nobody got killed, but they, you know, a lot of the girls botched up certain spots. They had one match where AJ and I forget the other girl's name, Oksana, botched up the finish and then just tried it again. It was a train wrecky disaster. And the physical challenge was capture the flag. Thankfully, nobody died. But they did a lot of running and jumping. Naomi won that one as well. She's the standout on the show. And it's 50% voting from the fans, 50% voting from the pros. At this point, I cannot imagine anyone other than Naomi winning. But I guess stranger things have happened. The people are behind her. She's very good. She's very talented. She's got a lot of potential. The rest of the girls are just, I don't know. I don't know what you do with them. So presumably some are going to end up on Raw and SmackDown, and presumably some of them will be sent back, and maybe some of them will even be cut. But, I don't know what to say.
And like you were saying, too, I mean, it's arguable that Naomi could be on the roster now in comparison, because there was a bad spot, well, at the end of that match where it looked like Kelly Kelly was supposed to break up the pin. Her and Alicia were supposed to start fighting. They didn't get in there in time. The referee had counted a pin, and then the NXT girls just kind of kept going because, you know,
that's what you do. You know,
yeah, exactly. And it was just kind of, it was bad, but then you're thinking, well, was that actually even their fault? I mean, the whole women's division, it's too bad, and I understand their need to have, they want girls that can be in Playboy, they want girls that they can trot out to PR events and all that sort of stuff, and that's fine. I can take that. That's why the E is at the end of WWE. But they really should have, like, you know, a Molly Holly. I mean, just a couple of people there that, okay, they're not going to take their clothes off and be showpieces like they want them to be, but they can at least help the process of making some of these people better. Because somebody like Naomi, because of her enthusiasm right now and just the fact she does have, you know, legit athletic skill, and it's like, it's too bad she's not going to be able to show off the way she should.
You know what's amazing about NXT? I was just thinking about this. What's amazing about the show is that if it's got 4 weeks left on Sci-Fi, and then it's booted off, and they don't have another TV outlet yet. So unless they get one, unless Bravo decides this one rating, it's so impressive, we need to get the rights for this program here. You know, unless they get picked up by Sci-Fi again, which I don't think is happening, or Bravo or whatever. I mean, they're likely going to go internet only, and an internet only NXT is going to die a death. I mean, there's almost no point of doing it because the number of people that are going to see it online is minuscule compared to the number of people that would watch it on television. But it's better off as a web show because it's just, you know, I'm much harder on it now than I was when I watched it because I was entertained by it because it was such a disaster and it was no one got hurt. So, you know, it was an hour of stupid entertainment. But, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 days later, it's just kind of like, huh, you know, you have an hour of primetime television, and this is what you put on the air. This show is built for internet only. You know what I mean? But internet only is going to fail. So it's like this catch-22. I just think of all the things that they could do with like an hour of primetime television, and they choose to put on the WWE version of The Gong Show.
Yeah, and you know what? Talking to Les Thatcher, though, on Thursday, I was thinking about the fact that really, timing-wise, this is terrible because, in a way, that was a Bravo show that took place on NXT. I wasn't big. Les, obviously, he started and was a big fan of doing, when he was producing and announcing in Southeastern, these behind-the-scenes kind of things, and you look at the guy, you know, kind of behind the scenes, and he was a big proponent of doing that for NXT. I wasn't necessarily that big of a fan of doing that, although I wasn't a big fan of the NXT concept. It's like, know, there's only so much behind the scenes in pro wrestling that I want to see, you know, 24/7 style and things like that, and it would be spread out amongst too many guys. You know, the whole training process, basically kind of, you know, adding in the tough enough element to it. But realistically for this show, I think they should actually do that. It would be perfect for Bravo. You have the whole women's dynamic on Bravo anyway with this type of TV. If they could have waited, or if they can wait and actually get this thing on Bravo, cut down a lot of the wacky BS and nonsense and actually put in some behind-the-scenes things of how these girls react to a situation like this screw-up, or, you know, how they're treated by the fans and how they interact with each other a little behind-the-scenes, more reality-based. They could, just with the girls, I think they could do this with, is pull off the half a season on Bravo. Now, what do you do after that with the guys? I guess you could. I don't think it would be as effective, but really, if they were going to actually get this thing on Bravo somehow, some way, the concept with the women, I think, was actually the way to do it. If they go and look a little bit more behind the scenes and cut down on a lot of the, you know, the nonsense stuff.
The problem with this show, there's a million of them, but one of them is, it would be one thing if the idea was, we're going to try and make life really hard for these people and humiliate them, and only the strong will survive. The one guy that wins, he's going to get his contract, and everyone else is going to go back to developmental for a year or get fired or whatever. That would be one thing, because, you know, Low-Key did survive, or Caval survived a lot of real BS on that show, and they really tried to make everybody look like a fool, and he rose above all of it, and ended up being the winner. And that's great. But the problem, which we actually saw with Nexus, is they humiliate everybody on the show. You end up with a winner and seven geeks. And then they decide, okay, we're going to push the geeks as this threatening faction. That doesn't work. Because now you've got a faction made up of one winner and seven geeks. So the geeks drag down the winner. And, you know, Nexus has actually done pretty damn well, all things considered. But when you think of how it should have done and how hot it could have been, part of the problem was they made all those guys look like fools before they put them together as this top heel group.
Oh, God, absolutely. And that's the problem with having zero planning whatsoever on what they thought of going in. I mean, it would have been one thing to... And you saw it with, I mean, Husky Harris kind of being the goofy guy, and then all of a sudden he's a cold killer for Cody Rhodes. I'm trying to think, on the first season, there was a situation, or Skip Sheffield, where he was, you know, doing the goofy thing, and then all of a sudden he's, you know, the jacked-up killer, you know, psychopath. It's the planning of it sucks, and they actually put some real thought into it instead of just doing it seemingly by the seat of their pants. You know, it would actually, they'd be able to pull off and make more sense. And,
actually, we have to head to a break real quick, Mike, but we'll be right back with more of that. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, pretty much everything regarding those two subjects. And before we went to the break, we were talking about NXT. And Mike, any final thoughts on that show before we move on to some of the big shows this past weekend?
Man, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, if it does end up with TV, or if it was one of those things that with synergy that Bravo can pick up, or maybe, you know, I don't even know, like Universal HD, which, if you have, you know, a lot of cable systems have that on. It's an NBC owned station. They replay Raw and NXT on Saturdays, and they have a lot of shows that NBC Productions has that haven't been on their other networks, or, you know, haven't been on in a long time. So it's a possibility you could end up there. Just going to be interesting to see what happens with it. And if it's a concept I think should go away anyway and should be seriously retooled if they do want to keep it around.
ROH ran a pay-per-view last night, internet only, from the Manhattan Center in New York City. And I know you didn't see the show, Mike, but you've probably got it available. It's at GoFightLive.tv, everybody, if you want to check it out. It's a three-hour show. We should talk about the production first. Production-wise, it was much improved from previous internet-only pay-per-views. Internet-only is very hard because the technology really is not there yet in terms of, if you've got a really fast internet connection, you can stream this show, and you probably will have few difficulties. There was one major outage during one of the tag team matches, in which I think that everybody that got the show ended up having an outage. And then I personally had maybe four separate small outages during the show, which sucked, but it usually came back on relatively quickly. The picture quality, you are sending information over the internet for video, and if you've got an HDMI cable, you can hook it up from your computer to your TV and watch it on the big screen, which I did. It's a very simple hookup. And the previous internet-only pay-per-views, the video quality was kind of sketchy. The video quality here was not at the level of ROH on HDNet or anything. It was not high def, but it was significantly better, I thought, than previous shows. I don't know if it was just me. I do know that I got emails from other people that said that they felt the same thing. So that was definitely a positive. And on this show, they ran it more like a traditional pay-per-view in the sense that the first couple ROH pay-per-views, it was like they ran it like a house show that you were watching live over the internet. So, you know, they came out, they did their big introduction, they had a long time between matches, sometimes they had an intermission that you sat through, and the show went nearly 4 hours, if I recall correctly. This one was like, you know, they had all night. There's no block of time for GoFightLive.tv. I mean, you don't, you know, you're not going to go off the air if you go long or anything like that. It'll go as long as you go. And they went out there and went almost exactly 3 hours, and that was including intermission. And it was a very different type of show than a lot of ROH shows that you've seen. It was not a show where everybody went out trying to have the best match on the show. They booked it like a traditional wrestling show in the sense that Kenny King came out in the opener and pinned Jay Briscoe. They had a basic match. It was told a good story. One guy, you know, the babyface got worked over. He made a comeback. They did some near falls. And then Kenny King hit a move, and Jay Briscoe did not kick out. And I was initially caught off guard, like, huh, how about that? But that was the way they structured the show. Each match got a little bit more complex. Obviously, the chain match with Steen and Carino against Generico and Colt Cabana had blood. But, you know, they worked their way up to that. And then after intermission, the big matches, the matches that were important, got more time and were very, very good. The Claudio Castagnoli, Chris Hero versus Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin match, that was an awesome match. Not to the level of some of the stuff that I saw in PWG last week, but a very good 3¾ to 4-star match. Just worked very hard. Everybody looked awesome. Two great tag teams just having a great tag team wrestling match. I mean, it was everything that you could expect. And then in the main event, Roderick Strong and Tyler Black had a good match, not a great match. I don't think anybody thought that Tyler Black was winning, and those kind of things always sort of hurt the match. I know that you know, there were some people that thought that they would do some sort of swerve, maybe Davey Richards, although he wasn't even there. You know, maybe Davey Richards, somebody would come out and end up winning the title in the end as opposed to Roderick, since the storyline is that he constantly gets screwed. But he did actually win the title here from Tyler Black. Tyler is going to WWE. Fans chanted, "Thank you, Tyler," when it was over, even though they chanted, "You sold out," when it started. And, you know, the only other thing, I guess, that was noticeably different, and is now being booked by the former Delirious, or he's still Delirious, I guess, but he's been taken out of storylines, Hunter Johnson. The only real difference that I saw is there were more non-finishes, or finishes that involve interference, or somebody trying to get involved. You know, Terry Funk was there in the main event, and he prevented the House of Truth from getting involved and that sort of thing. You know, there was a loaded elbow pad finish for Hero and Claudio. The chain match ended up with nobody chained, and Colby Carino, the 14-year-old son of Steve Carino, ran in. And just a lot of little things like that, but they weren't, it was not overkill. It did not feel like TNA. And as Adam Pearce noted on Figure Four Daily, when I interviewed him a couple of weeks back, a lot of people will complain about non-clean finishes in ROH and other promotions, but, you know, there is the theory that clean finishes greatly limits what you can do with booking. And you don't want screwy finishes all up and down the show, but a screwy finish does allow a story to branch off in different directions. And I think that that's the way they're going here. They want a more They want a more traditional wrestling product, at least on the undercards, and then have guys kind of go balls out in the main event. So I thought it was a good show. I give it an easy thumbs up. I don't know if I could call it one of the best shows of the year, since it certainly was not, but it was still very, very good. And Mike, what are your thoughts on the idea of non-clean finishes? Because you're a big fan of Japanese pro wrestling, and obviously for many, many years in All Japan, for example, it was an all-clean finish format. And obviously it was very successful there.
Well, it's, you know, I'm happy that they did run the thing, you know, more of a traditional type of pay-per-view, number one, because, you know, doing it like the Japanese doing it, even they're getting away from the long intermission during the pay-per-view and things like that. I mean, it still happens, but it's not as frequent. So changing the idea of things that way is actually really good. You know, as far as it's wrestling, you got to have, as long as enough of the rest of the show has clean finishes and makes sense and is continuing on, you know, it is professional wrestling. So you do need those things. It's not like you didn't have, you know, you have clean finishes, obviously, you know, kind of throughout the feud, you know, but the clean finish is at the end. And you have this wackiness and building up a story depending on how long you're doing it for. You know, you need to have that. It's not a sport where you can have, okay, the next contender is going to come up and the champion's ready. I mean, yes, you could do that, but it wouldn't make for very, you know, it doesn't make for sports entertainment, pro wrestling. I mean, that's just the way it always has been. And as long as you have the smart, as long as it's smart, that's all that matters. If it's smart, it works. If it's not, it's a big jumbled mess and you do what TNA does, and then everything doesn't matter when you do have the clean pinfall at the end, then, you know, it's a joke. And I got to be honest, I'm kind of surprised that Tyler Black didn't actually win, just because ROH has had success in the past doing, and I didn't think it was going to be a swerve last night, but in the next couple of weeks, I thought there was a possibility they could have done something, just because everybody did know he was going. But I think they did, you know, from how it sounds, they pulled it off well, and, you know, they were kind of building Christopher Daniels, and they've been building him up for a while, and Davey Richards on the ROH Newswire this week, you know, cut a promo and talked about going to Japan. But, you know, obviously those two guys are going to be in the mix for the title, which is going to be good. And frankly, I don't want to bash the move at all. It's Roderick Strong is ROH champion. We'll see how long he can go for. I mean, they can pull it off because there's not a whole lot of profile on them where he's got to be, you know, Mr. Superstar to carry him along. I'm not sure if it's going to be, you know, all that awesome. The matches will be good, but I'm going to be interested to see how this kind of plays out on TV and how he continues to roll on as champion.
Yeah, I don't expect it to be a long title reign, but Davey Richards is coming back. I would guess he'll probably win the title in December. But Davey did do a promo on there talking about how he was going to leave wrestling and have a normal life. And his mom called him and told him that, you know, wrestling is all you've ever done. Wrestling is your life. And so he has decided that he's going to return. And anyway, the point is, for those of you that heard the promo, it was, I think, about 100% legitimate. He was married. I don't think he's married anymore. His significant other wanted him out of wrestling, and I guess she's no longer a significant other, so now he's back into wrestling with a vengeance. So anyway, that is the Davey Richards story. He's going to Japan. He's coming back probably full-time for ROH. And, I mean, the story, it was not a storyline that Davey Richards was going to retire at the end of the year and become a firefighter. For those of you that don't know the story, you probably watched the show and thought, oh, well, that was a storyline swerve. No, it was not. He actually was going to retire, and now he's not going to. So anyway, that is the story on that. And Mike, we've got about a minute before we go to the next break. So let's get some quick thoughts on shark fights, and we'll come back and talk about more.
Yes, I guess you didn't have a chance to see it at all. I mean, when you compare, I watched it kind of, I didn't see the entire thing yet, but I kind of watched it after watching Shine Fights. And, you know, it was night and day difference, absolutely. Keith Jardine continues his loose streak, unfortunately, with Trevor Frangley. And I don't know if we'll talk about it a little bit more after the break, but, you know, the big thing, Sokoju and Houston Alexander. Sokoju, was done in the second round, you know, got hit and just looked like he tired and was just, you know, a accumulation of punches that put him down, and Alexander pounded him away to at least give Alexander a little bit more shininess back again after that terrible performance against Kimbo Slice that everyone's probably going to remember him for a while for. And You know, Keith Jardine, you know, was a little bit surprised when they cut him from UFC because I thought they could always have him around as just a guy even. You know, it's almost like a gatekeeper, but, you know, a really bad loss for him, even though it was a split decision.
We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk more about shark fights, shine fights, and more, plus your email questions. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Main feature on the site, the shows and the newsletters. If you're a fan of wrestling and MMA audio, if you love this show, for example, there is more audio on the website than you could ever possibly do anything with. It's $10.99 a month. It's a one-time monthly fee. Once you sign up, you get access to everything. And by everything, I mean 15 to 20 brand new radio programs a week covering pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, the history of MMA, Japan, Mexico, pretty much everything you can conceive of we cover on the radio programs. And not only do you get access to all of the brand new shows, at least one a day, usually more than that, you also get access to our full archive of shows dating back to 2005. There are thousands and thousands of shows, tens of thousands of hours of audio, some of the biggest names in wrestling, Bryan Danielson, Steve Austin, Ric Flair, the list goes on and on. They've all been interviewed on the program, all up there in a searchable archive for you to download and listen to. If you go to the gym, if you've got a long commute, I can't tell you how many people have signed up and say the site is a lifesaver because they hate getting stuck in traffic, but now they've got wrestling audio to listen to every single day, and it makes the commute go by much, much easier. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. You also get full access to both the Figure Four Weekly and Wrestling Observer newsletters. Pretty much every conceivable wrestling news bit is in those two newsletters in a very easy-to-read package every single week. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about shine and shark fights. Shark fights, of course, with the Trevor Prangley, Keith Jardine main event, which apparently was a success, and shine fights with a one-night tournament, which was not as big a success. And, Mike, what did you think of the shine fight show, the throwback to 1995?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing in the last couple of years because we had the Colonel Bob Sheridan-hosted half boxing, half MMA show last year, which featured Bobby Lashley and Guida, which was not good. I know we had a couple other bad MMA ones. We had some really bad boxing pay-per-views last year. There was a bad boxing pay-per-view last night even that was going head up against the shark fights with Eric Morales and Willie Lamond. And TNA's had some bad ones, obviously the Charmel and the girl from Survivor match. And there's been some bad pay-per-views in the last 2 years. And this is just another one. It's amazing. I can't believe anyone got paid. I couldn't believe the entire show, really, from what I've seen of it. Jason Chambers was interviewed. Now, he's supposedly the chief executive officer or whatever it is, the owner of Shine Fights. You know, he wanted a quote-unquote, a different dynamic. He wanted to take it back to the Pi days and have the tournament and have the ring and, you know, because people, it gives you a different perspective in the ring, which I know we're going to get to in a minute because it played havoc all night long. But he said, you know, they also had we want the fans to pick the fights. And he said, well, you know, if you're out there, you want to watch things, you get to your choice of doing them. You know, you go to a restaurant, you order off the menu, it's your choice. Why not do the same thing with fights? Basically, because you're always going to be minor league that way, because you can't build a promotion around, you know, okay, the fans choose the matches. One, it doesn't work anyway, as we've seen in multiple, you know, situations with pro wrestling and even somewhat in MMA too, but, you know, it's a stupid idea. I mean, and just the entire show was stupid. They had to move the thing from Virginia. They claimed that the show couldn't take place in Virginia because the commission would not let them do fans choose the matches. Which, you know, that should have been figured out a long time ago. So they moved this thing to a Indian reservation in Oklahoma. They're able to slide it by the commission there because it is on an Indian reservation. And there seemed like there were about 10 people there. It reminded me a lot of the Camacho Sr. Uruguay Compass fight last year when they had to move it out of New Jersey, and they said there's absolutely no way these men could fight each other. And they had to move it to a Doubletree Hotel in Orlando, Florida. I mean, it was the same thing. Nobody was there. I have nothing against Bruce Beck at all. He does, good boxing pay-per-views. And again, he's not Jim Lampley or anything like that. He's not even Gus Johnson when it comes to boxing, but he's been doing it a long time, and he always puts in a real yeoman's effort, and I think he did again here. The problem is, he doesn't know MMA. I mean, it's one thing to have Benny Ricardo and Colonel Bob Sheridan. Beck, he did not seem comfortable doing it. Bo Taylor as a color guy, was not that good. I mean, the production was awful. It wasn't non-existent, but it was damn close to it. They bring back yellow cards, which was ridiculous. Yeah, guys.
Really? Hold on
a
second. Hold on. I got to cut you off here. I was a huge fan of yellow cards.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because I saw Nick Lentz fight live about 2 weeks ago. This is what
Wait,
I think.
Can we somehow incorporate them into John Fitch matches then?
Well, here's what I think about the yellow card, okay? Listen, sometimes guys really are so boring that they deserve to be yellow carded. Now, I was fine with the yellow cards last night because they weren't actually just thrown around all over the place. I was annoyed that at least one of the referees looked like he abhorred ground fighting. And, like, a dude would pass the guard and he'd be telling them to work. And I'm like, he passed the guard. What more do you want him to do? But in general, I am a fan of the yellow card system because this is sports entertainment. It is a real fight, but at the same time, perfect example. As much as people cry about people saying that this is entertainment and it shouldn't be pure sport, you'll hear a lot of hardcore MMA guys complain about that. The reason that you have all of these shows and the reason that you have all of these UFCs and the reason that you have these guys at a top level fighting and Strikeforce and everything else is because Spike TV took a chance on UFC and the sport exploded. Now, if Spike TV had not taken a chance on them or Spike TV had canceled them for whatever reason, MMA as we know it would not exist today. It's just, that's a fact. And the Spike people at that UFC in Boston, sitting there watching Nick Lentz have the most boring, the most god-awful boring fight in the world on Spike TV for free on a prelim show, those guys all there were joking about how, wow, he's killing the rating here. And I don't know if they really thought that or it was a joke, because the reality is, on the prelim shows, the rating has never fallen during a prelim show. It's always grown, no matter what's happened on the show. It opens at a certain level, and it grows throughout the show. Nick Lentz became the first man in history to have a fight so boring that he actually killed the rating of the prelims show. The rating went down during his fight. He was so boring. So as a result, when they came out for the Joe Lauzon fight, which was an awesome fight, most of the audience was gone because of Nick Lentz. Nick Lentz should have been yellow carded. Nick Lentz should have been red carded.
That's the chance you take. I mean, you can blame that on the matchmaking, too. I mean, even if you put in there guys who, your Guidas and your Diazes, and yeah, you got lucky with the Lauzon fight, but you put in there guys who were always action, okay, that's one thing. But maybe I'm still shook up because of the way Pride would do it, where there would be seemingly, yellow cards given for lots of random reasons. And I have a real problem with that. It's a sport. I know it's sports entertainment, but you know what? You dock him a point. Now, in a case like, who was it, Caleb Starnes, who got on his bike and against Nate Quarry and just ran away the whole time, he should have been disqualified in between one of those rounds, flat out. If you keep doing this, you're disqualified, that's it. To do the yellow card bit, I don't think it makes any difference. If you have a boring fight like that, it's not, how many can you issue before you're going to DQ a guy anyway? Take the points away, then DQ a guy. You keep giving him yellow cards. Okay, they lose 10% of the person, then 25% of it. So what if he just keeps doing it?
So he ends up fighting for free.
Well, there's no way that's going to work legally, and that wouldn't hold up for too long. And why would I want, a manager or something like that? Why would I want my fighter doing that? And granted, obviously, nobody's going to think they're going to do that, but I just think it's really unneeded. Dots of points, and then if they don't want to fight, it's happened in boxing often. I mean, Oliver McCall busted into tears in his rematch with Lennox Lewis. They had to call the fight. I mean, it's stupid things happen. And yes, again, I mean, whose fault was it that Nick Lentz went out there and had that kind of craptastic fight? I mean, it could happen with anybody. You know, and that's just the chance you take having it on there. Yes, everything went right during Ultimate Fighter, and nothing would be the same. And yes, we all want that kind of thing, or fast action on the ground, you know, Buscapé and Alvarado style, but there's just going to be times that happens, and I think you dock points, and then you disqualify if they're doing that poorly, or the fight stopped, and, you know, they can bitch to the commission later, or appeal to the UFC, you know, the losing side on why it was stopped, and maybe they make it a no contest, or maybe they let it stand, but you do it that way instead of doing the nonsense with the yellow cards thing to me.
Here's my argument to that. First off, yes, Pride used the yellow cards poorly in many cases. I want to see yellow cards used with discretion by good referees. To me, you know...
And that's the thing I should point out in Pride for people that weren't familiar with it. Yuji Shimada, who was a boss in Pride, was basically the referee for a lot of those matches.
Yeah. Now, when you, and he shouldn't have been refereeing anyway, but the point is, if you are shooting in for a takedown and you can't get it, and you just hold on to the guy's leg and you hug it and you don't move for like a full minute, you're getting a yellow card to me. Because I see what you're saying about not using yellow card and docking points, but to me, these judges are largely incompetent enough as it is. So you want to add into that docked points? I mean, to me, it's just like, that is an even bigger disaster in the making.
But that falls to the referee. And I know there's a lot of incompetent referees, too. I mean, we've seen this repeatedly over and over and over again, too. But, I mean, so you have the incompetent referee, instead of, you know, calling the yellow card, yeah, you're docking points, but then it goes off to the judges, and you tell the judges to take the points away. And I know what you're saying, but it's just, I don't see the sporting in it of, okay, I don't know. I think it's just...
Well, it's
a
not,
concept that doesn't work for me.
It's not sporting at all. It's entertainment. That's you have to accept that in order for these to be acceptable. If you're looking at this from a pure sporting perspective, then yeah, a yellow card for not being exciting is ridiculous. But I look at it as, in order for this sport to succeed, you've got to have real fights, and you've got to simultaneously entertain people. And if you are turning people off, then you are doing the sport a disservice, and thus you should be fined.
But when you say it that way, how is it any different than boxing? And, you know, that way. I mean, you're up there to do the same thing. Nobody wants to see slow, boring, you know, fighters, you know, jab away and then not do anything and fight to decisions. And I mean, that's why Roy Jones couldn't make any money on pay-per-view. Yeah, he was flashy, and you loved watching him on HBO, but you didn't want to go pay to see him because, you know, you get the nonsense that you get out of a Roy Jones fight.
Well, there's,
you know, a lot of things...
There's a difference between having a boring fight, like, for example, a John Fitch fight. John Fitch is not the most exciting fighter in the world, and a lot of his fights are boring. But I can't think of a time where I would give him a yellow card, because to me, a yellow card is not given out for a boring fight. It's giving out for a man who's not fighting. You know what I mean? A guy who, he can't get the takedown, so he's just going to hold on for dear life and just sit there. You know, that's the kind of guy that, to me, deserves a yellow card. You're supposed to be in there fighting, and Caleb Starnes is an example. The man was not fighting. He was running away the entire time. That is beyond having a boring fight. That is not wanting to engage at all. That's a fine.
That's a throwing a fight, basically.
Well, sure. Well, he was the example where you should have given him a yellow card, another yellow card, and then disqualified him all at the same time. Just have to edit that out right there. Just to screw with the man. So, that's my thought on that. Actually,
and I dig what you're saying. And again, if they can pull it off where it makes sense, as the sport grows, the concept of pulling away money like that by referee discretion. I'm not a big fan of it. I would say instead of doing the yellow card, you give him the warning, you take a point away, and then you know what? Just if you take another point away, maybe, and then just end it. End it, kill it dead right there. You get out. We're not going to have you on again. We'll see you in Freeland Land.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment talking more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were ranting and raving about shine fights in the last segment for so long, that we haven't even really talked about the show yet. So we should probably do that here very quickly, and then we'll talk more about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, a number of different subjects in hour two. Story of the show was very similar to the documentary Choke, which I just watched, as noted, a couple of days ago. It was a one-night, eight-man tournament. Dudes got hurt. Dudes pulled out. We had a semifinal that involved a guy from the prelims versus one of the losers, and it came down to a Drew Fickett versus Carlo Prater main event. Drew Fickett beat him. Drew won all three fights in the first round, all via choke, and ended up the winner of the Shine Fights 155-pound championship. And he looked good this evening. Everybody else hit and miss, but Drew Fickett looked good.
Yeah, I think it did look good. And I tell you, sorry, went back to Japan. K1, and I love K1 Max. And I even the heavyweights, for what it was, the spectacle of what it was always, to me, fun, even the Vegas shows and stuff like that. But one thing that drove me nuts, and it always drives me nuts about one-night tournaments and anything, is the replacement guy and the guy who lost earlier. And, you know, it worked out for Remy Bunyaski when Bob Sapp couldn't continue, and he won the Grand Prix, one of his Grand Prix that way. And it's just, that drives me bonkers. And I just don't like tournaments. You can do, I think, two match tournaments, you know, and be fine with it. But to do three in one night, it's a pain, and it brings up too much nonsense. Again, too much nonsense stuff of, you know, the fights you don't want to see.
To me, the story of the show was, this was a throwback to 1995, and there's a reason that a lot of the stuff that they did in 1995, they're not doing today. So that was the lesson of the show.
Pretty much.
And, in fact, there were some massive production issues. Maybe we'll talk about some of those in the second hour. But we have a lot of other stuff to talk about, guys. Tons of stuff from pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, WWE, TNA, UFC. There's an Ultimate Fighter coming up. We'll talk a lot about WWE and TNA as well. So it's coming up in the second hour. We'll be back in just a moment with that after our hourly news break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news to talk about in the next hour. Last hour, talked a lot about the ROH Internet Pay-Per-View, Shine Fights, Shark Fights, and a lot more. And for those of you that are interested in the ROH pay-per-view, it is up available right now at GoFightLive.tv. I think the last couple of shows, they didn't put a replay up until Monday, but apparently the replay is available right now. So head to GoFightLive.tv if you want to check that one out. Also, this weekend was the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view on Friday night. And Mike, did you get a chance to see that one?
No, unfortunately not. And I tell you, there was so much boxing and MMA and wrestling that's been going on to try to keep up with. I've fallen into the trap of, I think, what a lot of Dragon Gate fans have, which is, okay, we'll catch the replay or we'll have it on the DVR, but we're not going to watch it right away. And I'm just as guilty of that as a lot of people are. And it's, you know, unfortunately for Dragon Gate, they've made the decision that they're going to start doing, much like, I'm not even sure if it's GoFight Live or not, but they're going to do internet pay-per-views just like Ring of Honor does, and I think it's a great idea for them. I mean, if it doesn't cost too much for them to have it an airing or two on in-demand, that would be great, but they really should probably have their stuff on internet pay-per-view, and I think they can really get a lot more out of it, and I'm happy they're making that decision because, to be honest, with the ROH pay-per-views, you know, they've been great, and I've had a chance to watch those live, but the only, you know, Dragon Gate one I've seen, you know, pay-per-view that I've seen debuting was the first one, and that's not good. And this is going to also give them the ability to do live, you know, doing live internet pay-per-views too, which really does help out the cause, at least in their case. I think it helps it out a lot more.
Yeah, I know that they're going to keep the regular pay-per-view deal. So I would presume that what they're going to do is air the show live on internet pay-per-view, GoFightLive.tv, and then they'll air a tape on. Actually, I should ask about that because I'd not even thought about that. But I just know they're gonna do both. So there's going to be, you'll be able to watch it on GoFightLive.tv. You'll also be able to watch it on pay-per-view. So I should actually find out which is going to be which. But we'll talk a little bit more about that Dragon Gate pay-per-view coming up here after the break. It was a strong show, not the best show that they've done. That remains the first show, but some good matches on the show, particularly a four-way that involved one of my new favorite wrestlers, Ricochet. We also saw down at the PWG Battle of Los Angeles. So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It was a big weekend of shows. No major WWE or TNA shows, but there was a Dragon Gate pay-per-view on Friday night, which was a very good show. Of course, ROH this weekend and two MMA pay-per-views. And we're going to talk about the Dragon Gate USA show here in just a moment. But I did want to mention, we had not mentioned earlier because we taped a little bit earlier in the day, and I wanted confirmation on this before we talked about it. But Mike Shaw, who wrestled under a number of names, including Norman the Lunatic in WCW and Bastion Booger in WWF, passed away yesterday at the age of 53 from a heart attack. And Mike, he was a big guy, a really big guy, and never became like a huge star in WWE or WCW or anything like that, but he was one of the guys that really helped get Owen Hart over when he was first starting out, and sad to see another one go.
Yeah, it was always amazing because I would only, living where I was, I would only obviously have a chance to read about Calgary Stampede Wrestling. And, you know, Owen Hart was getting, you know, even at that time, a lot of, you know, write-ups, and Makan Singh and Karachi Vice. And it was amazing when I had a chance to see him as Norman the Lunatic. That was the first time I ever really had a chance to see him, was in WCW when he came in and did that. And then he ended up being Bastion Booger in WWF. And it was like, you know, it was amazing. But did he have, I guess, in a lot of ways, a wrestle-craptastic career? Yeah, he did. But he seemed to, you know, there's nothing wrong with making money, and he had a gimmick and a character that, while it wasn't, you know, Observer Hall of Fame, you know, worthy standards or something like that, he still had the chance to make some money off of being Bastion Booger. And in fact, he had a chance to do it. What, it was Big Dick Johnson's dad, possibly. It was the last time he was on there a couple years ago. They had a little bit of a skit there, so, you know, it's very sad at that age. I know, obviously, he played Bastion Booger. He was not the slimmest man in the world. I'm not sure in the condition he was in when he passed. But, yeah, very, very sad. And just, two, I don't know, I guess this is, what, 12 in, like, the last 3-4 weeks. It's just, even though some of these are, you know, natural causes in old age and things like that, it's just still, that's a lot of people.
The Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view, a fine show as noted. The highlight, Adam Cole, Eric Cannon, Chuck Taylor, and Ricochet in a four-way match. Huge fan of Ricochet. They did a match at the PWG Battle of Los Angeles show last week. It was a six-man match, and I thought that match was fantastic, the Bola match. And it actually involved many of the same guys. It actually had the exact same finish where Chuck Taylor picked up and gave the Awful Waffle, which is an Omega driver. It's a terrifying looking power bomb. Gave that to Ricochet for the win, and just a fantastic match. The six man at PWG was Taylor, Brian Cage, and Ryan Taylor. And Brian Cage is a guy who's heading to WWE developmental against Johnny Goodtime, Rocky Romero, and Ricochet. I just love that match, and I love the match on the Dragon Gate USA show as well. So that was one of those matches where it was like it was a spot fest, but in fact, it was like one big comeback. It was like the bell rang and they started doing their comeback, and it went for like 8 minutes or something like that. 9 minutes, 41 seconds, actually. And it didn't feel like it went too long. It didn't feel like they did too many moves. It was just a really, really fun match. So that was a highlight. And also an elimination match with Gran Akuma, Akira Tozawa, John Moxley, and Yamato against Mike Quackenbush, Jigsaw, Masato Yoshino, and Hollow Wicked. Also a very good match. Kira Tozawa actually had the best match I saw all of last week and one of the best matches of the year with Chris Hero in the Battle of Los Angeles tournament. Just an outstanding match. And if you can get night two of Bola just to see that one, it's well worth the price of the DVD. It was just an amazing, amazing match. And the Dragon Gate USA show was headlined by BB Hulk and Masaki Mochizuki for the Open the Freedom Gate title. It was a fine main event, nothing special. You know, one of my criticisms of Dragon Gate, and I've told that this is how it's done in Japan, but that does not mean I need to like it, is guys who get their leg worked over for 15 minutes during the heat and then start running, jumping, and flipping during their comeback. And I saw a lot of that in this match. And the crowd seemed to be tired, and it was tough for them to get into the match. But, you know, I can't say it was a thumbs down or even a thumbs in the middle show. Thumbs up due to the elimination match and particularly the four-way. So that's playing on pay-per-view right now as well. So we've said it a million times. If you're a fan of wrestling, and wrestling nowadays, WWE and TNA bores you, there is plenty of great wrestling out there. You just have to look around for it. And sometimes you do not have to look far, like your local pay-per-view cable provider. So anyway, check those out. And Mike, we've got Ultimate Fighter coming up this Wednesday, the Koscheck GSP show. And are you excited for this?
I'm thrilled for this, and you know I'm thrilled for this because I don't care how many fights John Fitch had won. I don't care what could have happened. I wanted to see Koscheck and GSP again. I think Koscheck, not only, you know, style of fight-wise, deserved to be rewarded, and I'm not saying Fitch doesn't deserve, a shot at GSP again. He obviously does, probably in a sporting way, deserved it first, but because of what Koscheck brings to the table, because of what they're going to be able to do on the Ultimate Fighter with both of their mouths and both of their personalities, it just, I think it was a great, great thing and to have them square off, because it is a fight I'm actually really, really looking forward to seeing. And you know, St. Pierre is photogenic and very good and knows where the camera is on at all times. Koscheck is, you know, a far more exciting fighter now than when he was, when he appeared on the Ultimate Fighter, and you could always throw that dynamic into it, even though, you know, we've had former guys be on there as coaches and be on the show. You know, just him doing it, I think, is going to be great. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, not looking forward to the, you know, the fight night necessarily, you know, but it is it's a nice setup to go into this season, because I think, even though the hype for Kimbo was better and the ratings would probably be better for the heavyweights one, this is going to be a far more intriguing, I think, situation.
Well, we have a couple of minutes left here in this segment. I just have to ask you, can you name a single match coming up for Night of the Champions?
The Divas, they're going to merge the belts, right? Is that, or have they, no, they haven't done that already. So we get, what is it, Layla and Melina or something?
Yeah.
I think, and, well, we have Ms. Daniel Bryan.
That's
so
right.
So everybody can, you know, I can handle that, because a lot of people have been, you know, upset over the way Daniel Bryan's been treated and this, that, and the other. So, you know what, dudes, he's going to win the U.S. title, because they obviously have bigger plans for Miz. And, you know, I think even, like, you know, over the past couple weeks of interviews, you know, if you haven't seen that yet, then you're obviously just not paying attention or not watching the same show. They have bigger plans for Miz. I think Bryan gets the U.S. title now. There's a six-way. There's, I think, Undertaker and Kane. You know, I have no idea. I mean, do we get Dash and Cody Rhodes? Can I have Dash and Cody Rhodes on my Night of Champions somehow?
No, Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston for the... Yeah. You know, it's really sad.
By the way, there's no one luckier than Dash and Cody Rhodes, too, in a lot of ways, in that he has been put in a position that Drew McIntyre can look at every day and go, you know what, we're really getting tired of you and don't need your mess anymore, because, you know, here's at least Cody. It's not going to be the same effect or the same push, but I wonder if that was a wake-up call at all for Mr. McIntyre.
It's really sad. My buddy Craig, I've known him for over 15 years now, and we've watched 95% of all WWE pay-per-views, either at his house or we've actually gone to the events. Craig has watched them all, and last night he just sent me a text and said, by the way, I'm not getting the show next week. And I said, why? And he said, well, I have no interest in the card, and I don't feel like paying $60 for it. And it was like, wow. Another guy. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's not even like WWE has been awful or anything like that lately. It's just reached a point now where even if the shows are like, you know, Raw has been not too bad and SmackDown is good here and there, but there's like nothing that is hooking anybody. And one of my longest lasting, hardest core WWE fan friends is just like, he's thrown in the towel for this show. He's not given up completely. He says he'll probably get every other show. But I think just the combination of a lot of the same old faces, and I don't know, you know, we talk about this week after week, but it's just, it's not capturing people's interests. And we actually have to go to break. We'll talk about this when we come back. But a lot of people losing interest in the product, and pay-per-view buy rates are plummeting. And, you know, I really think that the cost is a big part of it. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, the very depressing story of my buddy Craig, who threw in the towel on this show after many, many years of being a hardcore fan. I remember back in the day when wrestling was hot, the shows, we'd have, you know, 6-7 people over, 8 people, 9 people. I mean, some of these shows, we had a lot of people over. And as the years have gone by, it's been dwindling. Now it's like me, Craig, and Vinny. And now Craig is not buying this show because he doesn't care about the card, and the $60 price tag is too excessive. And really, I mean, we've mentioned this many, many times. With wrestling, there used to always be a deal of the tickets have to be cheap. And as it turns out, WWE would raise prices and sell more tickets. And the idea, I guess, was that if you make the tickets cheap, people think it's a cheap product. Whereas if you raise the ticket prices, they see it as like a bigger entertainment event worth their money. So anyway, the same thing happened with pay-per-views. They raised the price of pay-per-views, and people continued to buy. We have now reached a point where I think that they've overshot their target. $44.95 for standard, $54.95 in a lot of markets for HD. You're asking people with taxes to pay $60 for a Night of the Champions pay-per-view, where the question must be begged, what are you getting for $60 that you're not getting on Raw or SmackDown or one of these mega shows? I mean, is anything on there? I mean, you are getting different things. You'll probably get a title change. You're going to get longer matches. You're going to get the first Undertaker-Kane match since, the last time they feuded. But is it really worth $60? And if you look at the buy rates of late, a lot of people are saying, no, it's not worth $60.
And that's, you know, I've always kind of been more of, you know what, if you got something on there that's going to take the money out of my pocket, it really doesn't matter what it costs to a point. Because if you got something on there that makes people want to pay for it, they're going to do it. But obviously they're not giving people, you know, their money's worth. And none of these shows, I mean, a lot of, like, we're talking about, you know, Shine, not Shark Fights, but Shine, these boxing pay-per-views, most of the WWE and TNA pay-per-views. If you're gonna continue to have these types of pay-per-views, I mean, $25, even though they won't go down that low, makes a lot more sense. And I know it's hard to go down and then to jump back up again. It would be almost impossible to do so, but they just have to face it. I mean, people don't have the money right now, and you're not giving them the inspiration to want to try to order this stuff. And it's too much stuff. If you ordered the UFC show, you know, this month, well, there's, you know, $50 or whatever it is already out of your pocket on top of a cable bill that you're probably paying if you have it bundled up with your phone. And what a lot of people do now, well, you're paying $200 a month as it is already. You know, it just, at what point is, you know, too much too much? And really, they've hit it. I mean, at $55 for the average pay-per-view, and you can come up with a lot of reasons of if selling why it would be worth $55 if you're on WWE's end, but realistically, consumers in all aspects of everything are just not listening to a whole lot of that right now from a lot of places, especially not the pay-per-view industry.
Would I have bought Shine Fights for $54.95? Not in a billion years. Not in a billion years. I have a lot of friends, far more friends actually, that watch MMA than pro wrestling nowadays. And, you know, I called some of them and I was like, you know, there's this pay-per-view Friday. It's going to be wacky. It's a one-night tournament. Who cares? It's $29. Let's all get together and get some food and watch it. And it was fun. We had a fun time. But if the same thing would have happened, it was like, this show's, you know, $54.95 and, you know, nothing on it that I really want to see. We were just going to do it for the fun of it. It's not happening. And with WWE, I mean, again, with UFC, it's one thing. UFC is hot right now. And so you can charge $44 or $54.95 for a pay-per-view because you're going to have probably, you know, 5, 6, 7 people over. And all of them split the cost, and you're paying less than $10 per person. If you're down to the point where you've got one friend, or maybe two friends that come over for your WWE pay-per-views, and you have to split that $54.95, you know, you're looking at each person having to pay, you know, almost $20 each to watch this pay-per-view. And when you look at the lineup of the shows, I mean, it's just it's very hard to justify that kind of payment for a lot of people. And the pay-per-view buy rates are going down. They're dropping at a very quick pace. And part of me wonders if, you know, they raised the price, and more so than just raising the price, to me the issue is when you raise the price to a certain level and you get a guy like Craig who does not want to pay $54.95 for every show anymore. Now he's going to skip this show, and he's saying, well, I'm going to get a show every other month. So then you're kind of thinking, well, now people are getting out of the habit of having their monthly pay-per-view get-together party. And once you start getting out of the habit of doing something, then it's easier to go, well, you know, I'm going to get every third pay-per-view. I'm going to get the Survivor Series, Rumble, Mania, and SummerSlam. That's it. And then once you get in the habit of that, then you sort of realize, well, do I really need to get Survivor Series? Probably not. Then it's down to WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, and SummerSlam. And it's just, to me, it's more than the price increase causing people to stop getting a pay-per-view here and there. It's breaking people's habits of having a monthly pay-per-view party. And I think that has really hurt as well.
Oh, absolutely. And WWE, I mean, you're seeing it with the NFL Network, you know, with their Verizon service and stuff like that. We're seeing it with Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate. They have the production and they have the capabilities, because I don't know if people have noticed this. If you have the WWE's application for your iPod or your iPad, or even just going on YouTube, you can watch the entire SmackDown. You can watch all of NXT. You can watch a lot of things. They really ought to start transferring and really start moving things over to basing everything, and I know you can order it now, and they have 24/7 on the computer now, too, or online. They really sort of start focusing on those pay-per-views so they're not splitting costs, and have them on there because people will do it anyway. But as people become more tech-savvy and they are hooking up their HDMI cords right into their TVs and stuff like that, they may want to consider just, you know, even though it would still be too much, you know, $34.95 for all the pay-per-views, you know, start hyping that up, and they get to keep all that money, and that may be a better situation for them as they continue on.
Yeah, I think, I mean, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, and actually, I could probably go up to WWE.com. I'll see if I can find it, but WWE does, I believe, air their pay-per-views online if you want to stream it there, and the last time I checked, it was the same price as getting the pay-per-view. And
that's what the UFC does that too, and I think that's crazy.
It's absolutely ridiculous, because first off, for those of you that don't understand the pay-per-view business, the pay-per-view companies take 60% right off the top, maybe a little bit less. But WWE, when they run a show for $60, they're getting about 40% of that. So why would you not pass that savings along to the consumer when you stream it yourself? Maybe you can, you know, maybe you don't have to do, you know, maybe you add $5 to cover the cost of having to stream it from your website and that sort of thing. That's all fine and good. But, you know, to charge the full $54.95 for a streaming pay-per-view, when I could just buy it on HD on pay-per-view and get much, much better quality, not have to worry about buffering or anything like that, it's ridiculous. And like you said, if I could get the WWE pay-per-view for $29.95 online with my HDMI cable, I would do that in a heartbeat. And I would get every single show without any problem, and so would Craig. but they're making it difficult for us to buy and giving us few incentives to do so.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. There's obviously the content part of it, which is why I think TNA needs to do it even more than WWE is. They're just not giving you anything. I mean, the Money in the Bank. Was it Money in the Bank? I can't remember. Fatal Four Way. I can't remember what it was, but it was very TNA-esque in that you're setting up a pay-per-view to see what Nexus is going to do. And you know what? You can wait to see what happened with Nexus on Monday night because you knew something was going to come from it. And you could always go back and try to watch the pay-per-view again or borrow the tape or something like that. There's just no inspiration for anyone of, you've got to see this now. And that's sad. That's really sad in that, you know, and Dave talks about this all the time of, you know, wrestling, you can control your own stories of how you want people to try to react out of them. And it doesn't always work the way you want, but they have the most opportunity to do it. And they're just blowing it constantly.
Let's at least preview this show here. The main event, Sheamus, Wade Barrett, Edge, Randy Orton, John Cena in a six-pack challenge for the WWE title. Apparently, they are going to insert a sixth person there. I don't know if we'll get that sixth person put in on Monday, if it's going to be a mystery sixth man that we find out at the pay-per-view. But I would guess Sheamus leaves with the championship. As I will preface this like I always do, this will change a million times. But as of this weekend, the idea for WrestleMania, if they do a unification match, WWE versus World Championship, it was going to be, as of this weekend, Sheamus versus The Undertaker. So if they want to keep the titles on these guys for a long time leading up to that match, it stands to reason that Sheamus will retain here. One would think that Wade Barrett should win the title, but I don't even know if Nexus is going to be Nexus in the next month or two, so I would guess they're not going to put the title on him. Randy Orton's a possibility, and then Sheamus will win it back, but I think that Orton is probably going to end up in a feud with The Miz, so I don't know. Maybe Orton could actually win the title and Miz could cash in against him. We shall see, but what are your thoughts?
I just, if they're going to do that idea, if they actually stick with that idea, and obviously it's always questionable if they will, but I can see that belt, even if it doesn't come off, this upcoming pay-per-view, Night of Champions, that belt's going to be off of him so he can win at the Rumble, because I think Sheamus is going to win the match, and it's going to be one of those things that they'll continue on in the story of, you know, he always seems to get lucky, and I think that's going to, I think they're going to continue to play on that, which is why I think he's going to win, but I can see that belt coming off of him and him winning back at the Rumble, which then obviously goes to lead to him and Undertaker.
I should do a quick correction here. I don't know if Sheamus Undertaker is planned to be a unification match, World versus WWE title. I just know that that is one of the big matches that they want for WrestleMania is Sheamus versus Undertaker.
And they should. I understand, and to be honest, I would actually unify. They should have unified all of these titles. I bitched about this a long time ago anyway. They should have unified all of these titles. I understand having two touring champions, and I think that does make a lot of sense. In fact, I would have, a champion and a secondary
champion,
the IC, U.S. titles, if they could use them better.
Hold on one sec.
At this point, I'd merge that too, but I know we're going to break.
Yeah, we got to head to break. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And for all of the latest news in pro wrestling and MMA, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Highlights of the website include our radio show archive and our newsletter archive. It is a $10.99 sign-up fee for the premium area. We have a ton of free stuff as well, so don't let the price turn you off if you can't afford the $10.99. There's daily news updates, there's TV show reviews, there's news, tons of stuff. But if you sign up as a member, you get so much more, it's frankly ridiculous. We get 10 to 15 to 20 radio shows every single week, depending on how busy the week is. I'm sure there have been weeks where we've had as many as 25 radio shows. And if you love wrestling and MMA, you have a commute, you work out on the treadmill, and you want something to listen to, however you like to listen to your audio, we will give you more audio than you'll know what to do with. There's daily shows, as noted, sometimes two shows, sometimes three shows a day. We got an archive dating back to 2005. Some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Ric Flair, some of the names before they were stars. Serena, before she went to WWE, was a guest on the show. Same with Tiffany, The former ECW GM, Brian Danielson, now Daniel Bryan. Tons of these guys have done shows. You can search our archives and listen to the interviews. Fascinating stuff from a lot of these guys. So check that out. Plus the newsletters, Observer and Figure Four, brand new issues every week. Issues dating as far back as 1991 for the Observer. We're starting in 91 and moving forward. And of course, all of the new issues are going up as well. That's all included in your membership. If you pay $10.99 a month, you get full access to everything. There are no extra fees for archived shows, anything like that. You just sign up, you get full access to everything. You will never, legitimately, you will never go through everything. It's impossible. So sign up. You will get your money's worth. Pretty much guarantee it. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, you were talking about unifying titles before the break. Or, as Alicia Fox said on Monday, what did she say? She didn't say unify.
Undefining.
Undefining.
She'll be the undefined champion.
Tell us about undefining all the titles.
I'm a big fan of undefining all the titles. And, you know, I would love to. Two touring champions make sense in that they have the separate house show tours. I think it's a good idea. But every once in a while, to have the thing merge is not a bad idea. And obviously, having title versus title matches at WrestleMania and things like that, I think it is a good idea. The rest of the titles, they don't have a deep tag team division, and they don't have any plans on having it. They shouldn't have had two tag belts. They should just have that team being able to go wherever they want. Same thing with the women, which I think makes, that's the one that to me makes the most sense, because especially when it comes into bigger pay-per-views and things where you are in the community more, things like WrestleMania and Royal Rumble and things like that, where you, you know, using the synergy and stuff like that, I think that's a smart idea, because whatever your top woman is can appear on any, you know, channel. And the IC and the U.S. titles, frankly, should be merged, although in a perfect world, those would be functional titles to be the number one contender, or at least in the mix, you know, as it comes to the world champion. But they're not going to do that. I would just say merge all the titles. There have been too many anyway, but hopefully when they do come out with these new-looking title belts, they do look a little bit better than the incredibly wacky throwback Spartacus-style tag titles that they have now.
Actually, apparently they've had those belts for well over a year now, and everybody just thought they were just so god-awful ugly, and eventually they made it to television. But those are not new belts. So for those of you that there was a story about a new WWE logo coming out, and people were trying to say that, well, no, there's no new logo coming out because they just created new belts with the old logo. Well, those belts were actually created about a year ago, and apparently there is a new logo that is on the way, but the original new WWE logo leaked. I'm sure some of you probably saw that online, and Vince McMahon flipped his lid. So anyway, there's going to be a new logo, but it's not going to be that logo. Because that logo got out, they're redesigning a new logo. So anyway, that's the update on that whole situation there. Yeah.
It's like Bill Watts when he freaked out about, you know, Jake Roberts leaving Mid-South and going to the WWF, and no way he's going to lose that TV title now. It's just amazing mentality. It's a logo. Relax, Vince. Jesus. Although, I guess it was also a good way to get those belts out and to be able to donk them off. Like, okay, here's the presentation of the unified titles, and then everybody's going to have, you know, newer, better-looking titles, and I guess they just got them out. Maybe somebody will buy a replica version of them or something like that. So that at least makes a little bit more sense now. That makes me a little happier.
Team Lay Cool and Melina in a lumberjack match. It's going to be either Layla or Michelle McCool. They have not announced that. I guess we'll have to find out at the pay-per-view. Facing
not
Melina.
Not Lumberjills, by the way.
Yeah, Lumberjill match. Women's and Divas Championship will be merged. And I guess we'll have one girl that can go show to show. And, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, ought to be an epic encounter there. And just, yeah, it's, oh, man.
Speaking of epic encounters, Kane and The Undertaker. As I noted last week, these men have been feuding since before there was even a Monica Lewinsky scandal. It has been 13 years these men have been feuding, and now they're feuding again over the exact same thing, powers, and it's for the World Heavyweight Championship. I presume Undertaker's winning. I don't know. Quite frankly, and this is part of the major problem with WWE nowadays, it doesn't matter who wins. So that's the match.
It's remarkable. 13 years. I mean, it really is remarkable. And, you know, this time around, people haven't bought into it as much for obvious reasons. They've been doing it for 13 years. And, it is the over-the-top hokey, obviously, with the powers and, you know, the lights going out, and Kane has usurped the powers, and it's always amazing that The Undertaker, as much as people love him, has always been able to, it was like Vince's teddy bear. I would just shake my head of, like, I cannot believe how into this people are and, like, how episodic that this thing got. But, it's, you know, Kane, if nothing else out of this, Kane is going to deserve better because his interviews, as hokey as they are in a way of the music is playing and all that sort of stuff, he is pulling it off to me awesomely, which is really good. But, again, it's the Undertaker and Kane. How long do you want to see them in the ring with each other? Frankly, I would rather see Kane out there doing wacky catch-as-catch-can with Big Show again like they made him do that one time. But,
that's right.
You know, if nothing else, the interviews have been great.
I think Kane has done a great job delivering awful interviews. And I to me, it's like what you say is more important than how you say it in terms of business. And, you know, Kane has done a very good job saying stuff that's dumb. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe this is going to do some gigantic number, but I expect it to do as awful as any other pay-per-view has been doing lately. So I can praise his promos to a degree, but he's still saying stuff that no one could possibly care about or take seriously, and that's the problem. Miz and Daniel Bryan should at least be a good match for the U.S. title. Miz does not need this title. He's got the briefcase. They're going to go all the way with him. I would be flabbergasted at this point if he did not win the championship with it at some point before the end of the year. But, yeah, this should be good. Bryan Danielson should win, and all shall be right with the world.
I would think so. And, you know, obviously Cabal winning NXT, and just, you know, the fact that they're not at least terrified, even though they've never used Evan Bourne and guys like that, in my opinion, the way that they should, at least they're not terrified of these, you know, guys who are under 200 pounds anymore. And it's nothing else. Daniel Bryan can have a great match with anybody, you know. So, and to me, Bryan, more of a case of Daniel Bryan than Kane, actually, as far as the interviews from the past week. Because if you think about it with Kane, and look what they're fighting over anyway. So, yes, it doesn't, I mean, obviously, what else could he really say, though, in this feud? I mean, that's, yes, the scripting could be better. You could be doing better things with it. But look at the basis of most of their storylines between each other for so long. I think Daniel Bryan not really getting across that how badass he is. You know, he could do the little laughing thing, but, you know, I don't think that interview on Monday turned out the way I would have wanted it to.
No. It was not a huge success. It was not a complete failure, but Miz was not very good, and Daniel Bryan was doing too much laughing. He was laughing off what should have been a more serious segment. And you know, it's one of the things WWE does with, I mean, John Cena does it all the time. It starts out as wacky comedy and then he gets serious. And it's like a pattern that they have, and maybe for some guys it works. It did not work in that segment on Monday, and hopefully they've got a blow-away angle for tomorrow night to get this thing going. We've got...
Yeah, that was a smirk, don't laugh.
Yes.
You know?
And don't talk about how you need to wear your gear backstage or you'll be kicked out, and you've got a bad haircut. Bad idea.
Yeah, just the equivalent of, you know, when Michael Cole called him out for how much does this guy weigh, 40 pounds or whatever it was? It's like, okay, no thanks.
Big Show and CM Punk, this is TNA sort of booking in the sense that I believe at the last pay-per-view they had a Big Show handicap match against Punk and the Straight Edge Society, and now it's just a straight match. All right. I don't know. I hate to say this, but who cares about this match? What does either man have on the line here? Why is this match on pay-per-view? Is it like a number one contenders match? I haven't watched SmackDown this week, granted. Maybe Big Show cut off some of CM Punk's beard. I'm trying to think of like a good reason that this match would be taking place on this show and not just a SmackDown top of the hour match, and I cannot think of one. Am I missing something here? What's happening in this match?
No, that's the whole thing. You got Big Show and CM Punk just on there. And I swear to God, they have that Jericho mentality with CM Punk where it's just like, oh, he's going to get a reaction out of people. He's good when he talks and, you know, he makes people hate him and he has good matches, but they're just not doing anything with him. And, you know, the Big Show, it's just like, yeah, they're having, it's a match to have a match. and it doesn't make any sense. But then again, look at the Punk Mysterio feud, and then when the Big Show got involved in that and pulled him out. I mean, they have done nothing right with, you know, as far as Punk storylines the entire year. So at least he's getting some pay-per-view money out of it, because otherwise that doesn't make any sense.
Maybe this is like there's an angle that's going to take place. Like maybe a new Straight Edge Society will debut or something. I don't know, but I just look at this match on the show and it's like, so Big Show broke up the Straight Edge Society and CM Punk the heel is going for revenge. What am I missing here?
And in a way, Brian, too, it's like, you know, Big Show's going to be in that movie. He's been on, I think, a couple of sci-fi and USA things, too. It's almost just like you're having him on there because you're having him out there doing other things anyway.
Sure. And then finally, Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston for the Intercontinental Championship. Ziggler will lose the title if he gets counted out or disqualified. I look at it like, which man would best challenge Daniel Bryan for the U.S. title in a unification match? And the answer is actually neither of them. But I guess I would enjoy seeing him beat the crap out of Dolph Ziggler. So I guess that's my prediction.
And that's what it would make the most sense to me, too. And I would actually have Ziggler win there. And, you know, because you'd call on Ziggler's wrestling background. And you could do more things with that. It's just my hope that Vicky Guerrero is actually able to get Caitlyn out there and somehow get her involved in the match.
Who?
Good. Wasn't that her NXT rookie?
Oh, Caitlyn, yes. Lovely lass. I thought you said Caitlyn.
What? Oh, you're just thinking of cake?
I was just thinking of cake. And pie.
Yeah, actually, I pulled out, the last break I pulled out, I was looking at my old Great American Bash programs, and it's, you know, it's amazing in 89 when you had Flair and Funk and Muda and Sting, you know, there's a whole page given to Norman the Lunatic and Ranger Ross.
Really? You know, yeah. I was amazed when I watched Choke. I could not fathom that I was watching Sergeant Craig Pittman in there having MMA matches, and he was a fighter.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. I actually completely forgot about that.
Yeah. It's actually quite fascinating to watch, and he got armbarred by a very, very small man that he outweighed by 100 pounds. MMA, everybody, back in 1995. We're going to head to a break here in just a moment. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up. We'll talk a little bit about the Cena film, Legendary, which debuted this past weekend. So that's coming up in just a moment here. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And I am here trying to find some information on Legendary and the box office. And it's not looking good. It's not listed in the top box office on Box Office Mojo, which means it probably did really, really poorly. In fact, the bottom-ranked movie here did $13,000, and apparently that may have done better than John Cena's film. So I could be wrong. I guess more information is forthcoming. We'll probably have some more on Monday. But it did open in very, 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 very few theaters. So, although The Romantics appeared to have been in two theaters, and or maybe that's... No, that's two theaters. Wow. Well, that's not good. Things don't look good for Legendary, everybody. So, Mike, are you going to see this movie?
Yeah, when it comes out on DVD in a couple weeks, because I don't think I'm going to be, quote-unquote, one of the elite that gets a chance to see it, unfortunately, where I'm at, unless I travel to Philly or Baltimore or Washington, if they're actually going to play it.
And I actually don't know if it's playing around here either. I don't see it anywhere, but I guess I could probably look around a little deeper, but... Anyway, everybody, check out that movie if you get a chance, Legendary with John Cena. It actually, in the first couple of days, it had decent reviews, and then I guess everybody else saw it, and the reviews absolutely tanked. It was at 18% on Rotten Tomatoes, I believe, so not good for young John Cena, but what can you do? So that is the latest from WWE Films. Tomorrow is a brand new edition of Raw, and of course TNA has taped all of the TV leading up to Bound for Glory, so new show starts this coming Thursday. It was preempted this past Thursday, and the football game that was opposing did the highest rating, I believe, of all time in that time slot, so good thing TNA was not on. But anyway, that's a big week of stuff coming up. We're going to be back next week with more as well. We'll talk about the first season of Ultimate Fighter, and the WWE pay-per-view will be getting ready to kick off when we do next week's show, so it should be a fun time. So thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks, Mike. Of course, everybody check out WrestlingObserver.com for more audio. We got stuff up right now. Check it out, and we'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.